And I want to say especially welcome to Sachin. He's my friend, and every time I'm preaching, I say, Sachin, can you come? And he usually shows up. So, hi, Sachin. So it's good to see all of you here. I hope you've been encouraged as the service has gone, and that God will continue to speak to you as I bring the word. I hope there will be something for you to take home with, and it will just not be another person talking past another 45 minutes. Okay, let's go home now. So I hope it will be something that really transforms your life. So today I'm looking at something I've titled Framing Your World with Your Words, and that is a very long title, but I'm going to break it down and tell you exactly what I'm talking about when I say framing your world with your words. So when we just look at the word frame, for example, most of you are very likely familiar with it in three contexts or even more, but I'll bring three. So we have a picture frame. Most of you are very familiar with a picture frame, so it holds your lovely pictures or your not-so-lovely pictures. And then you have, you know, when you frame somebody, that means you put together evidence or contrive events and accuse somebody of having done something falsely. So that's also framing. And then also there's a frame of mind. So how you react to situations and how you deal with them will be determined by your frame of mind. So all of these are very interesting definitions of the word. But the part of framing that I want to look at today really has to do with talking. So framing in the sense of what you say. So when you look at framing in the sense of what you say, it says, you know, you conceive or imagine an idea. So this is framing. You form words with your lips, especially silently. And most of us do this when we're very angry and annoyed. You know, you frame lots of words. And then you give utterance to. So sometimes you're angry and things come out. You give an utterance to. You express something choosing your words carefully. Sometimes the carefully part is after you've already said something and you think, maybe I shouldn't have said that. And then you also draw up plans or basic details for, or you create an outline. You construct or form or make by fitting parts and uniting parts together. So this is the context of where framing is going to be today. And then I said framing your world. So what is your world? When we talk about your world, we're talking about your personal life. We're talking about your family, whether they are near or they are far. We're talking about your community. We're talking about your workplace. So basically, any place where you have some sphere of influence, that is your world. Okay? So you need to keep all these things together because we're going to bring them all together and see why I'm talking about framing your world with your words. And then finally, we come to the words. So what do words have to do with this framing, this speaking, my world, how does that all come together? So the thing with human beings is that before we ever speak anything, we conceive or imagine it. So it's somewhere in our heads before it ever comes out of your mouth. Sometimes you're lucky enough and you've got like a whole hour, you know, to contemplate and think, what am I going to say? How am I going to say it? Does this sound too hard? Does it sound too soft? You know? And sometimes you wish you could have had 5 seconds longer because it's already out there and there are consequences with what you've said. So words are very important. So let's go to Genesis chapter 1. That is where we see words first starting to come into play. So I'm going to read verse 1 to verse 2 only. It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And then from verse 3, it says, then God said. Okay? Then God said. So God is uttering something. God has got an idea in his mind, and he wants that idea to come out through his mouth. Okay? He's got a basic outline of what he wants the universe to look like, And now he wants that universe to come out. He wants to now construct, fit, and unite things together so that he can take this idea, this imagination that he has, and see the reality of it out there. And God said is repeated 9 times between verse 3 and verse 30 in Genesis. And between those verses, you see the results of what God said. Okay, you see the results of what God said. And then in verse 31, it says, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. So a question for you. How did God know that an elephant has got a trunk, it's got tusks, it's got big floppy ears, it's got 4 legs, and a centipede, on the other hand, has got 100 legs, and it can fit in the palm of your hand? So how did God know that? So, when we read verse 31, it's not like God looked and said, oh my God, an elephant, oh, a centipede. You know, he wasn't shocked at the things that had come out of his mouth. He already had the idea conceived in his head. It was sitting there. And when he saw it, it says, this is very good. This is exactly what I was thinking of. When I was thinking elephant, I thought, wow, big and gray and, you know, noisy. This is what I was thinking. When I was thinking centipede, like creepy, crawly thing. So he had this idea. And when it came out, he wasn't shocked. He had this idea when it came out. This is what he had planned. This is the outline that he had in his mind. And in God's case, his words were very carefully spoken. So he was not careless about what he put. As he speaks between Genesis 3 and verse 30, he's very deliberate in the things that he puts together, very carefully. And we see the universe is framed through that. So there are verses in the Bible which summarize creation. And I'm just going to go through a few of them because they just use this word framing. And I want to bring them back to you as we go in and out talking. So like Hebrews 11:3 says, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed. Okay, so there's that word framed. We understand the worlds were framed. So framed, talking, speech, utterance, bringing together by the word of God. So the things which are seen were not made of things which appeared. And then Psalm 33:6 and Psalm 33:9, it says, the Lord merely spoke and the heavens were created. He breathed the word and all the stars were born. For he spoke and it came to be. He commanded and it stood firm. And then John 1:3 says, through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. Okay, brilliant. So God is there. He's creating things. He's speaking. What's that got to do with you? Good question. So Genesis 1:27 says, so God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. So being created in God's image has many implications. And you could probably sit here and preach a whole sermon about what being created in God's image means. But I'm going to take only one aspect of being created in God's image. And that's the fact that God speaks, you speak. And because you speak and you're created in God's image, and God's words have the ability to frame a world, bring it into being, bring it into existence, you have that ability. And you think, I don't think so. Yes, you do. I'll show you. So, Proverbs 18:21, it says, the tongue can bring death or life, and those who love to talk will reap the consequences. Now, I ask you a question. Who can put up their hands and say they've never said anything in their life where they wish they could have shut their mouths because there were consequences to what you said? Who can put up their hand and say, I've always been happy with what has come out of my mouth. I've always been satisfied with the consequences of what has come out of my mouth. Okay? Which means that the tongue can bring death or life, and which means that when you speak, there are consequences to that. So your words are not idle. They're not just going, drifting out in the air and they've disappeared. That was it. No, your words are important. So secondly, the second thing to note is God pays attention to your words even if you don't. Okay, so you might say things, 5 minutes later, you've forgotten everything you said. Or you wish you can forget everything you said. But God pays attention to your words. And because God pays attention, it's this fact that you're created in his image and he's put in you the ability to frame your world. That's why God pays attention to your words, because he wants to hear, what are you saying? What are you saying? What are you framing your world with? Okay, so we're going to read a passage in Numbers 14. And the background to this passage is that the Israelites have been in the wilderness. You know, they've come from Egypt. They come to the promised land. And then Moses sends them out, like 12 of them, to go and have a look at the land and to spy it out. So the 12 of them come back. All of them say, yep, the land is brilliant. It's exactly what God said it was. It has everything he promised us. Everything. There's nothing missing from what he told us. And then 10 of them say, but. Well, the guys in there, you know, like they're huge, really, really big. And we are grasshoppers. Okay, now tell me, even the smallest baby, okay? The smallest, tiniest, premature baby. Can that compare to the size of a grasshopper? But that's the word they had in their heads. Okay, we're grasshoppers, we can't do this. And then there's Joshua and Caleb, and they say, no, we can. So we pick up the passage from where they've brought this news, and I've told the people, no, you guys are grasshoppers, you can't do this. Okay? And then it says in Numbers 14:1-3, then the whole community began weeping aloud, and they cried all night. Can you imagine crying all night? I mean, I think people who've grown up in Africa and have gone to African funerals can imagine crying all night. But I think if you've grown up in Europe, the concept of crying all night might be quite foreign. But I think crying all night takes quite a lot of strength, you know. It's really draining emotionally to cry the whole night. This is what they did. The voices rose in a great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in Egypt or even in the wilderness, they complained. Why is the Lord taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Our wives and our little ones will be carried off as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? And then verse 26 says, then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, how long must I put up with this wicked community and its complaints about me? Yes, I've heard the complaints the Israelites are making against me. I have heard. God cares about what you say. And then verse 28 says, now tell them this. As surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do the very things I heard you say. Okay? God cares about what you say. As surely as I live, says the Lord, I will do to you the very things I heard you say. You will drop dead in the wilderness. That's what they said. Okay? You will drop dead. Because you complained against me, every one of you who is 20 years old or older and was included in the registration will die. I raised my hand. This is what God said. This is how I had framed your world. Okay? This is the plan I originally had for you. This is what I had intended for you. So I had raised my hand and I swore an oath to give you this land to live in. Okay, I didn't send you out there without saying I would help you conquer whatever would come your way. I swore I would do it. And we go back to Genesis where God spoke and things came into being and he's spoken again. And his expectation is that things will come into being for the children of Israel. And they've turned around and say, no, we've got a different expectation. Our expectation is that we're going to drop dead in the wilderness. Our expectation is that our wives will be carried off, our children will become plunder for our enemies. That is the world we are framing. Yes, God, we know that you framed this world, but we've got our own world, and we are framing this world. And God said, but none of you will enter it except Caleb, So we talked about the 10 and the 10 and the 2. So that's Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. You said that your children will be carried off as plunder. So God is repeating everything they said to him. You know, you said your children will be carried off as plunder. Well, I will bring them safely into the land, and they will enjoy what you have despised. So he's saying, you turned up your nose against it. The very children you said, oh, these are the guys who are going to be, you know, they're weak and vulnerable. They're the ones who are going to enjoy it. But as for you, you will drop dead in the wilderness. So you've painted this picture. This is what you want. You're welcome to have it. Okay? And your children will be like shepherds wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. In this way, they will pay for your faithlessness until the last of you lies dead in the wilderness. So unfortunately for the children, there were consequences because of what their parents did. So again, this is a reminder why I talked about your world. Because you have a sphere of influence. Okay? And whatever you say does not just impact you. It impacts those around you. So think about what you're saying. Think about the world you are framing. Because somebody will have to live in that world with you, with the words you've spoken. So very important. So Proverbs 6:2 says, you are trapped by the saying of your mouth, and you're taken by the speech of your lips. And we have a few examples of some people who did that. So there's a guy called Japheth, for example. And he's a guy that comes from a background and brings a lot of baggage with him, okay? He was rejected when he was a kid because his mother was a prostitute. And well, so he's got lots of baggage, okay? And then the Israelite community turns to him. This is the time of the judges when they don't have kings yet, and say, well, can you rescue us? You know, they're being oppressed by their enemies. Can you rescue us by the Ammonites? And Japheth said, okay, I'm going to go. But Japheth is not quite sure. Because, you know, all his life, he's been told he has no value. All his life, he's lived in this world that's been framed by other people because of his status. Okay? So he's not too sure if God will do exactly what God said, you know? He's not too sure about God. So he says, God, he makes a vow. He speaks. He frames his word. He said, if you give the Ammonites into my hands, whatever comes out of the door of my house to meet me, I will, when I return in triumph from the Ammonites, will be the Lord's, and I will sacrifice it up as a burnt offering. Okay? So he goes, he conquers, he comes back victorious. Verse 34, when Japheth returned to his home in Mizpah, who should come out to meet him but his daughter, dancing to the sound of timbrels? She was an only child. Except for her, he had neither son nor daughter. When he saw her, he tore his clothes and cried, oh no, my daughter, you have brought me down. I'm devastated. I've made a vow to the Lord that I cannot break. God is listening to the words that you are saying. They are important. Don't just speak carelessly. They are important. Jesus says in Matthew 12, 36 to 37, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words, you will be justified, and by your words, you will be condemned. So we go back to Numbers. Those guys were condemned by their words. Joshua and Caleb were justified by their words. God is listening to what you say. So there are examples that we see in the Bible of people who choose to frame their words differently from the circumstances and situations around you. Because you might be thinking, oh no, if my situation was positive, I would obviously, you know, be living in this positive world. But we all know life happens. And we all know situations come and face us that are not pleasant, okay? And what we say in those times and situations will determine where we end up at the end of that situation. So I'll give you a few quick examples. So we have like the Shunammite woman, for example. So for those who don't know her, this woman, she was quite wealthy, had a husband, and there used to be a prophet who used to walk by her place every so often. And she told her husband, okay, I think this guy's a prophet. Let's let him stop for lunch whenever he's coming back. So he used to stop for lunch. Then she said, oh, let's build him a room so he can at least sleep here. So they build him a room. And then he used to come there. So after a while, he asked his servant, oh, does she need anything? So he asked her, and she said, no, I don't need anything. I'm fine. And then the servant said, well, she actually doesn't have any kids. So he said, okay, fine. So he called her, and she comes, and he tells her, next year this time you're going to have a kid. And she's like, no. Yes, you are. So okay, next year, that time she had a kid. Okay? So Elisha speaks. Okay? Elisha speaks, and this child is born out of the words that Elisha speaks. So she has a son. Then the boy grows up, and one day he's complaining, my head. The father says, takes him to the mom, he dies. Okay? So, God, you give me this kid, he's dead, what now? And then she takes the son, puts him in Elisha's room, and she tells the servant, let's go see the prophet. And the husband is like, but it's not anything, you know, you have to have a special reason to see the prophet. And he said, no, it's fine. So I don't think she told the husband, though, the kid is dead. She's just like, no, I'm going to see the prophet. So she goes. And then she gets to the prophet, and he's like, oh, is everything fine? I say, yeah, everything's fine. Everything's perfectly fine. And then he tells his servant, you know, something's happened, but God's not telling me what it is. I don't know. Something's happened, but I don't know what it is. So finally, he finds out, okay, this kid has died. And the lady's like, did I ask you for this kid, you know? You could have left me in peace. You gave me this child. But the thing to look about this woman is she realized a word was spoken and that child came into being. And in the same sense, she knew a word could be spoken and turn that situation around. And she wouldn't let go of the prophet. She said, I'm not going back until my situation changes. So he sent his servant off, and his servant went and put the staff on the kid's face. No, the kid's not waking up. And then he's like, okay, I'm coming with you. So he goes, and he prays for the kid, and the kid comes back to life. Now you might think, okay, very extreme example. How's that going to work in my life? But what I'm trying to point out is, nowhere in this passage do you see this woman saying, oh my God, the kid is dead. You know, there's nothing to indicate the distress of her situation. Because she has a picture in her head of the world that she expects. She expected that child would grow up to be a young man, would grow up to be an old man. And that's the expectation she followed through in whatever she said and did. That's what drove her. And that's what we need to have in mind. You see God honoring her word. Everything is okay. Everything is fine. God honors that word. Now, it might have had a lot of other things around it. But the fact is she's framing this world in which she expects her son to live. And that's the world she gets. Okay. And then we look at the centurion, for example. So he had a paralyzed servant. And then he comes to Jesus, or he sends some people to Jesus, and then Jesus said, okay, I'm going to come and heal your servant. And he says, no, don't bother coming. Just talk. Talk. Say something. And my servant will be fine. Because he said, you know, I'm a soldier. And I tell my soldiers, go there. Go arrest that person. I don't have to be there. And they go and they arrest that person. You know, my word carries authority. My word has the power to change situation. And I know you are a person of authority, and therefore your word has the power to change situations. Okay? So speak. That is sufficient. I know whatever you say will reframe my world, will change this world of my paralyzed servant into a different world where he is whole and well. Okay? So he's saying, you have authority. That's why we looked at Genesis 1:27. You are created in God's image. And this man, this centurion, he recognized that God had authority. And he also recognized he had authority. Okay, in the words that he spoke. You have authority in the words that you speak. That's why I say, don't just throw them around. They're important. And then finally, I think Pastor Shola talked briefly about this when the Syrophoenician woman, and she's the one who has like the daughter who's lying at home and is demon possessed, and then she comes to Jesus, and Jesus tells her, no, I can't heal you because, you know, that's bread for the children. And she says, yeah, I know, but the dogs get to eat the crumbs. See, I want a different outcome for my daughter. God's mercy extends to people even outside the kingdom of God. God's mercy is available to everybody, and I want a part of that mercy.
So this is what she frames for her daughter. She's seen the suffering that the daughter has gone through. As I'm saying, your world, your sphere of influence, your words matter. You can change things. You can turn things around. Do not be careless with the words that you speak. Speak words that will bring life into the situation you're in. Speak words that will turn things around. Speak words that will bring healing and wholeness and restoration to the people who are suffering, whether it be yourself, your family, your community, your workplace. Speak the world you want to see. Frame your world with your words. Okay, so obviously, talking a lot, you're starting to get the picture. But it's also possible that other words from other people come into your life and you let those frame your world, okay? So it is equally important what you are saying, but it's also equally important that you're not letting other people frame your world for you. So it says in Romans 10:17 that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the good news about Christ. So this verse is saying, when you hear something, you get faith for that thing. In this context, what you're hearing is the gospel of Jesus Christ. So you get faith for that. But if you have an abusive spouse, an abusive parent, an abusive child, an abusive boss, and they're speaking words into your life, that will equally produce faith for whatever it is that they're saying. Okay, so words have this funny ability to, you know, they go into your heart. We look at the parable of the sower, and he sows seed. And it says, you know, some fell on good ground, bad ground, and the one that fell on good ground has the ability to grow. Okay, the word, you know, if you put seed on a soil, it doesn't matter if it's wheat, apple, or even weeds. Okay, as long as that soil is ready, that will grow. Okay, the soil will not say, oh, this is wheat, I'm not going to let this grow. Oh, no, these are weeds, I'm not going to let it grow. No. So it's very important also people around you, people who have influence in your life. What are they saying? Okay? Are they framing your world the way you want it? Or are they taking you somewhere else? Okay? Because if that fruit grows, it will produce bad fruit. And then you'll become a person, you know, who lacks self-worth because people have always put you down all your life. You try to please people at the expense of yourself. You know, you go out fully exhausted. And at the end of the day, the people you're trying to please are still not pleased. Okay? And you doubt God's love for you and whether he has any interest in you. And then also you think your wrongs are so big that God's sacrifice is not big enough to forgive you. So a very quick case in point is Judas. Okay, Judas thought, okay, I've betrayed Jesus. There's no way God can forgive me. And he go and hang himself. Peter, on the other hand, says, okay, I've betrayed Jesus, but I know his mercy is big enough to forgive me. So if you're letting other people, so other than God, so either yourself, you know, you talk yourself down, or other people are talking you down, or even the devil is talking you down, you let those words come in, they can also frame your world. Okay, so very important also, external things, internal things, very important. So we've established words are very important, okay? And the thing with words is they work on a garbage in, garbage out principle, okay? So this is an IT term. So if you put rubbish into the computer, rubbish will come out, okay? And the fact is, if you put rubbish inside you, rubbish will come out, okay? So it says, the human heart, so this is the source of our words. Okay, everything that you say, everything that you think comes from your heart. And when I say heart, I don't mean the thing that pumps blood around you, but what defines you as a person. So there, when you put rubbish in there, that rubbish comes out. And a test of knowing who you are as a person is to see yourself under pressure. Okay, put yourself under pressure, like pressure cooker, squeeze, circumstances, situations, what is your first reaction? What comes out of your mouth? That will give you a true indicator of what is inside you. Okay, when everything is nice and rosy, we can all be very polite, very nice, very kind to everybody. But when things go wrong, that's an indicator of what's really inside you. So Jeremiah 17 verse 9 says, the human heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? So it's really bad inside there. And then it says in Proverbs 4:23, Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. So we're talking about framing your world with your words. They come from there. You need to watch what's going in. And Jesus said in Mark 7:20-23, it's what comes out of a person that makes a person unclean. For from within, out of the human heart, comes evil ideas, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, evil, deceit, debauchery, envy, slander, pride, and folly. So all of these things come from the inside. So the reason this is important is, obviously, if we're going to be framing our world, if we're going to be saying things, if we have a bad store, we'll only bring out what's inside. And if we are bringing out things from a bad store, it means we're framing a world we actually don't want to live in. And then we get into this cycle of constantly, you know, saying more bad things, creating a bad situation, saying more bad things, creating a bad situation, and you just find yourself stuck in this world where you're not happy, but actually you're creating this world where you're not happy. Okay, so Matthew 12:33-36 says, make a tree good and its fruit will be good, or make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad, for a tree is known by its fruit. So he was talking to the Pharisees and he calls them, you brood of snakes. How could evil men like you speak what is good and right? For whatever is in your heart determines what you say. A good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart, and an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. So basically, in order for us to frame our world in the right way, we need to deal with our heart. We need to go to the root of where everything comes out from and deal with that. So how do we do this? We need to get a new heart. Okay. So, get a new heart. Okay, what does that mean? Get a new heart. So this is very easy. One, admit to God that you're a sinner. Basically, God, I mess up. I say things I shouldn't. I do things I shouldn't. I think things I shouldn't. Just in case you've never said anything you shouldn't. And believe in Jesus Christ. Okay? Believe that he came as a substitute and paid the price for the things that you shouldn't do, the things that you shouldn't say. For the world that you've created that he shouldn't have to live in. He came to live in that world so that you don't have to live in that world. And you accept this gift. So that is how you get a new heart. So basically say, God, I can't do this on my own anymore. I know I want a better life for myself. I want a better life for the people around me. I want to have a better community, a better workplace, but I can't say the words just because my heart is wrong and I need a new heart. Okay? And the second thing is you need to renew your mind. So everything that goes into your heart goes through your mind first. So in there, down there, out of your mouth. In there, down there, out of your mouth. So that's the cycle. Okay? And if you have a new heart but you still feel rubbish there, rubbish will continue coming out. So that's why you sometimes have Christians and you think, oh, is that person a Christian? Well, yeah, they've got a new heart, but they still have garbage down there. So they're still filling down there with garbage. So we need to make sure that we're filling this place with new things. And it says in Romans 12:2 that don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. So going back to our passage in Numbers, God's pleasing and perfect will for the Israelites that they were to go into the promised land, they were to conquer their enemies, and they were going to be victorious. That was God's pleasing and perfect will. But they conformed, they copied the behavior and customs of the world, and therefore they got a different outcome from themselves, and it wasn't God's perfect will for them. So eventually they did end up in the promised land, but it was 40 years later with a generation totally wiped out. Okay, so that was not God's perfect and pleasing will, but that's the world that they chose. And then the third thing to do is to deliberately choose to frame your world in line with God's upper story until it becomes a way of life. Okay, so the thing is, because we are in the habit of saying things without thinking, we need to get into the habit of thinking things and then saying them. Okay, and that doesn't happen overnight. Okay, that takes effort. It says in Psalms 19, verse 4, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and redeemer. So question, if Christ was to shadow you for 24 hours, okay, he's there walking to you, next to you, living your day for 24 hours, with the words of your mouth and the meditation of your heart be pleasing to him. Okay, would you be happy to have him next to you while you lived your life out for 24 hours? So if the answer is no, so you've got some work to do here in terms of making sure you're deliberately speaking things that frame your world in the right way. Okay, and the best way to do this is actually to learn God's language, okay? If you speak God's language, you're unlikely to say things you shouldn't say, okay? And how do you learn God's language? God's language is written for us very easily in the Bible. So make the Bible a daily part of your life. As that becomes more and more a part of your life, you will, your mind will preference that because it will fill your heart. And because it's filled your heart, that's what will come out of your heart. If the word of God is not inside your heart, everything else will come out, whatever is inside there. And everybody knows, you know, if a container is full, you can't pour any more stuff into there. But if it's empty, hey, let's put everything in. So you got your TV, you got people talking, you've got your newspapers that they give you in the morning when you go to work, your newspapers that they give you in the evening when you come from work, and everything in between. It's all going in there, okay? Evening Standard, Metro, everything, TV, MS Dell, whatever, you know, they're all going in there, okay? They're filling you up, okay? And when you're under pressure, you're like, let's phone Rambo. Maybe he'll come rescue us because that's the only thing you've been watching, you know? That's the only person you know he can solve problems because you've spent time with Rambo, okay? So we need to spend time with it so that when we're faced with these situations, we know we can call on God, okay? We know what to speak. We know how to speak in line with God so that our world is the world we want, okay? Our world is the world we want to live in. So I'm going to bring my talk to an end, and I'm going to throw out a challenge to you as you go. And this challenge is, what words are you framing your world with, okay? What words are you framing your world with? What are you saying? What are you saying? Are you thinking about what you're saying? Are you saying what you want your word to be? So are you constructing? Are you putting together? Are you uttering? Are you conceiving ideas? Are you carefully speaking things that bring your world to the place where you want to be? So I'm going to hand over to Alice at this point.